again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast. We talk about all things Orlando City, Orlando Pride, and OCB, even though they're dormant this season, but primarily Orlando City. So welcome to the program. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Joining me, as always, David Rowe up in Tallahassee. Dave, how you doing?
I had to get home in my kayak. It's been raining a lot. But I'm home and I'm dry and ready to talk about our favorite teams.
All right. Well, it is not true what you've heard. Dave and I are not the next two center backs in line to play for Orlando City. It only seems like it. As once again, Dave, the injury bug has ripped a bite out of Orlando City this week, injury and illness. It wasn't enough to have a couple of key players out on international duty. You've still got Dom Dwyer out. You still have Scott Sutter and Jonathan Spector out. You have you had to get Lamine Sané into the thing. He took a knock in training in midweek, and it was thought to be just a bruise, that he'd be okay by game time. But on game day, Jason said he was too sore to play still. Doesn't expect it to be a long-term thing, but he could not play on Saturday. And Will Johnson showed up at training on Friday running a fever and showed up Saturday, and he looked so bad Jason Christ told him to go right home. He didn't want him in the locker room, didn't want to get anybody else sick, but apparently Will looked like death warmed over and was sent home to recover from his illness. So a couple of surprises again on a game day, then when we saw the team sheet, oh my goodness, was it different. It was a lot was different.
That's the most interesting team sheet I've ever seen.
Yeah, so Chris Schuler stepped in, as you would expect, as the fourth center back. And then Tony Rocha, who has to this point only played in the midfield for Orlando City in actual games. He's played some fullback in you know, some preseason games and that kind of thing. But he was called upon to return to his collegiate days and go back to center back and play some center back for Orlando City in an MLS game against only the guy who won the Golden Boot last year, Nemanja Nikolic, and Chicago Fire team that had been, had scored a couple of goals last week against Houston and had kind of been playing up and down soccer, but, you know, they can score goals at times. And that was kind of scary. RJ Allen took Will Johnson's place, so that was a little less scary since RJ is a right back by trade. And then we saw Pino move back to the bench and Josue Coleman getting some time at striker, a position which I think he played for about 14 seconds during the match before dropping back into the midfield and basically spending most of the rest of the evening behind Justin Merrum or Chris Mueller or both. So it was an interesting lineup.
So you're saying there were some challenges is what you're saying.
Yeah, when I saw the team sheet, I sort of thought, well, if I was doing the podcast now, I might predict a 3-1 Chicago victory with Nikolic getting all three goals. But you know, actually, I was quite pleasantly surprised, not pleasantly at the outcome, the final outcome, yet another 2-1 loss, the third in a row. But Orlando City really bossed that game throughout. It really felt a lot kind of like the Portland game in that they got scored on first, but it always seemed like they were going to score at some point. And it seemed like once they kicked the door down that they would probably go on and score, you know, two, three, four goals. But it just didn't work that way. We saw a familiar face. He was familiar for about 15 seconds. Patrick McLean started in net for Chicago, which was kind of a surprise to me, but he was Orlando City property, you may recall, for a couple of weeks, and then was traded after Orlando City picked up Josh Saunders last year from New York City FC. So, you know, McLean probably wanted to show Jason Christ what he could do, and he made a couple of really, really sparkling saves in the match. I believe he's up for MLS Save of the Week for his stop on Justin Merrum, who I keep hearing people saying he's not very good and he's not playing well. But I thought Justin Merrum was really good on Saturday. You know, he's going to get himself into areas where he can't get out of because he likes to take guys on, and that's what he does. That's his thing. If you don't know it after the first 12 games of the season, I'm telling you now so that you know the rest of the way. This is what Justin Merrim does. This is who he is. It's who he was with the crew. It's who he is with us. And I thought he's not looked good in the past when he's been tucked inside. But I thought he looked, even though he was tucked inside a lot of the game and like switching back and forth with Coleman and things like that, I thought that he played very well. And he had quite a few moments that had it. I could hear it outside in the crowd, and definitely we said it in the press box, quite a few whoa moments where, you know, he'd make a move and you go, whoa. And so I thought Merrim played pretty well. But I thought that overall the team played very well. But they, again, concede first as Mohamed El-Munir is whistled for a foul and a free kick is given, one that Jason Christ said was never a foul, should never have been given. And the free kick taker, Alexander... help me with the last name.
Oh,
Katai.
Katai, yes.
Sorry, I had a senior moment. It was in my head, and then when I went to say it, it was gone. So Katai steps up, takes the free kick. Looked like Joe Bendik got fooled, like because Schweinsteiger was also there. Maybe he thought Katai's run was going to be a dummy, and it wasn't, and it was a very well-placed free kick, and Bendik looked like he was caught sort of mid-hop. And then when he did go to his right, huge mistake. He's not able to get his right arm up, and he tries to reach across his body. I think if he gets the right arm up, he may save that. But it's in the net, and it's 1-0, and you know, completely against the run of play.
Well, it was an excellent free kick, you know, taken. I mean, it was a hard one. Even if, like you say, even if Joe had gone the right way, it was still going to be a tough one. It's hard to, could he have played it better? Sure. But you know, those things happen in split seconds. You know, give credit to I can't even say it, you know, for taking a good kick. And like you said, you know, Schweinsteiger is right there. I think I was probably expecting him to take it as well. So, you know, no surprise there. It is unfortunate, but this is not exactly the first time that we've gone down, you know, 1-0 in a match. So like you said, I wasn't necessarily worried. It stinks, and you have a little bit of a here we go again. But at the same time, despite the lineup, I agree. I think that overall the guys that were on the field had a they really had a pretty good game. I mean, I think if you go back and read our player grades and man of the match, you know, it's reflected in that. There was a ton of chances, especially from Merrim. I think he had, what, 5 shots, and only one of them was truly bad. And then, you know, you've got the one that McLean made that great save on. So if McLean doesn't make that great save, we're talking about an entirely different result.
Yeah, and McLean had a couple of really good saves in the game. He was really good. He kept Yuri Rosell from scoring his first goal for Orlando City, and had another one. He can't remember who he stopped. Maybe it was Coleman, but he had another really good save in that second half. And Orlando City, for a while, helped him out. Wasn't hitting the net. Just really. Nothing was on frame. Everything was wide. Everything was high. Maybe just in their zeal to try to get something on frame, just not having that final bit of composure and concentration to keep their shots on target. But I think, you know, in the end, they had enough opportunities to get the job done, and they just didn't put enough in the net. There was also a tremendous play by Chris Mueller to get the ball into Christian Aguita for the goal for Orlando City to make it 1-1. But that play, I believe, was started by another Coleman pass. So just a really nice bit of play that came together for Orlando City. But again, that was the only goal of the night, and it just really felt like some goals were going to come. I mean, RJ Allen had a beautiful back post ball to Kleshchen. Kleshchen couldn't get his header on target. There were a few opportunities to shoot where guys took an extra pass. And, you know, that's when you have Coleman in there as your striker, and he's a midfielder by trade and a guy who likes to pass the ball a lot, he's going to pass up some shots sometimes, especially young guys like that are going to do that. So, it was looking like it was just going to be a 1-1 draw unless Orlando City could find some kind of magic, but it actually went the other way as Alan Gordon just absolutely destroyed a ball from about 10 yards above the box, and there it was no chance for Bendick to stop that one. It was a difficult situation because team really was going for the win, and they got a little bit stretched, but there was an opportunity maybe for the one of the center backs to step up. It couldn't have been Chris Schuler because Chris Schuler broke his arm in the game in the first half, and he played the entire second half with an air cast on. It was like, why can't Chris bend his arm? What is going on? And so I asked after the game, and Jason Christ said, yeah, it's a broken arm. He played the second half with a broken arm. So he's a tough dude, and I'm sure that I probably would have needed a lot of, you know, something, some kind of painkiller, and I would have needed to lay down for like a month.
Yeah, I definitely would not. I certainly would not have continued playing 45 minutes of soccer at the MLS level, especially against, you know, a striker like Nikolic. Not happening.
Yeah, and the weird thing.
Yeah, good on him. I mean, tough guy.
The weird thing was Schuler almost got the game tying goal late. He had an opportunity. Mm-hmm. He got a nice pass in from I think it was Allen, and he had a shot, but it was blocked by the defense, and it was in a good spot. And it would have been on frame. So anyway, a 2-1 loss for the third consecutive game, and a real, real lost opportunity for an Orlando team missing a lot of guys to prove that they can win without Dom Dwyer, without Jonathan Spector, without Scott Sutter, without Yoshimar Yotun, because it was there for them to win, and they had every opportunity to do so. Just very wasteful with the chances. It was a very weird dust-up at the end of the game, where Kleshchen got run into by Mo Adams, didn't like it, so he tackled him at the, you know, just at the top of the box. They went down in the box. Adams brought his foot down in Kleshchen's face, and immediately the referee, Nima Sagafi, shows a red card to Mo Adams. And it's like, well, what's going on here? That's a red card, and it's in the box. And then right. after he gets up and sorts everything out, he gives a yellow to Kleshchen. And then he claims that the initial call was on Kleshchen, and so everything after that doesn't mean anything. Jason Christ was very adamant after the game that he was told by the head of officiating that in a dead ball situation, if a player gets a red card, now keep in mind, once the foul is called on Kleshchen, it's a dead ball. If then a red card offense occurs, then the foul is given where the red card happened, which was in the box. So mm-hmm. he was just beside himself with anger, with frustration at there not being a penalty called on the situation, not getting satisfactory responses from the referees. And he was in the press conference. He didn't even really make an opening statement. He said, I'd rather just take questions tonight. Sorry, guys. Which is okay, because, I mean, he ends up usually repeating himself when we ask questions from what he said to, you know, to summarize the game anyway. But interesting, though. I mean, he really was happy with his team's performance overall. Obviously would have liked more finishes, but he was certainly not happy with the officiating, and he stopped probably just short of getting fined. But Chicago, I hear, has appealed the Mo Adams red card, which is actually kind of surprising because, I mean, you know, we all remember Kaká's little face wash on Aurelien Collin, which was obvious in jest and good fun, and that didn't even get, you know, an appeal from Orlando City. So you would think that usually you don't appeal unless you're pretty sure that's going to get overturned. So I'd be interested to see how that happens. I know Chicago is a midweek game, so we'll know by Wednesday if it does get overturned or not. But that looked to be, and I only saw one angle of it, and obviously I saw it live because I was there. But I saw the one angle on replay, and it did look like he brought his foot down right into Sasha's face, whether or not it was intentional. I mean, that's – I don't think you can really – at least from the angle I saw, you couldn't glean intent from the replay. So I don't know how that's going to shake out. But that was a very odd moment, and, of course, the fans are not happy about that.
And neither was I. Yeah. You probably weren't either. You know, certainly Sasha wasn't, and obviously Jason wasn't. As far as Chicago appealing that red card, well, they're not Orlando City, so it's worth a try. Obviously, you know, if we were to it would get shot down because, you know, like you said, the Kaká face thing. But yeah, it's You're right. The thought that was going through my mind is okay, here we go, penalty shot, but nothing. And you're left shaking your head and wondering what's going on. In regards to all the other missed opportunities and shots, we had some guys that were taking chances, usually from outside the box. And I almost feel initially in the game I felt okay about that because I'm like, all right, well at least they're taking a shot, they're taking an opportunity. I would almost rather that than taking one too many passes and just losing the ball. And there was, I can't remember who it was, but I know that I was yelling "shoot" at the television screen when somebody had the ball, and they did not. And I'd have to go back and watch again to see who it was. But if I had gotten to the level of frustration where I'm saying that with guests at the house and all that, and I'm yelling at the TV, then it was obviously something that was happening enough that I was getting frustrated about it.
Yeah, well, the shots from distance were necessary. Chicago was sagging back pretty good defensively, so it's worthwhile to have a go from there, especially with young
Sure.
an inexperienced, relatively inexperienced goalkeeper in the net. The problem is you got to hit the net for that to be effective, and Orlando really had trouble doing that early on in the game, and it was too bad because I think there were some opportunities there. If you score an early goal on Patrick McLean and maybe shake his confidence a little bit, you could go on and win the game comfortably. And really, there were enough chances for Orlando City to win the game comfortably, but they did not. And now they followed a 6-game winning streak with a 3-game losing streak, which I think is still a +3 in the overall plus minus. If you take the last 9 games, that's still pretty good. Orlando City's schedule now gets rougher. They go on the road for 3. They're gonna have to get some results, and they're gonna have to get some guys back probably to get those results. Because even in when your team is deep, you have a league of parity, and going on the road without Dom Dwyer is not going to be ideal, because we've seen the difference he makes in the offense. We've seen the team's record with and without him. And people say, well, it shouldn't matter who you put in there at striker. If you have another striker, it shouldn't matter. Dom does things that other guys don't do. And one of those things is he pulls the defensive shape apart. Stefano Pino hasn't learned that yet. Josue Coleman hasn't learned that yet. And Chris Mueller hasn't really learned that yet. And a couple of those guys are not nearly as good a hold-up play that Orlando City needs, because Orlando City has, I mean, Merrem isn't really slow, but he's not a speedster. Cleschen's a little, get a little long in the tooth. He's not quick. So you've got guys you need to bring into the play in the Orlando City attack. And Dom does that because he can hold on to that ball that extra second or two to let those guys get into good spots. So there's things that Dom does that the other guys aren't doing. Maybe that's something they address in the summer window. It's hard to say, but Dom Dwyer is definitely a key to what this team does offensively, and that's why the team went out and got him and spent so much money to get him.
I was about to say that same exact thing. There's a reason why he's getting paid the money he's getting paid. Like you said, you can see it just in the results when he's on the field, when he's not on the field. And, despite other guys stepping up, I think, Mueller over the last 9 games has played exceptional. He's not necessarily the best. He's not going to be as experienced as a rookie, but I still think he's playing good. Despite everybody wanting Merrem to score more goals, I think he's been playing well. Sasha's settling in. I think there's a lot of good things happening, but having Dom as that center point, like you said, he pulls defenses apart. He's somebody they have to account for, which opens up stuff for everybody else.
Right. Well, and when that's what I mean when I say he pulls defenses apart. He makes guys move that otherwise would be comfortable sitting where they're at. And once they move, that opens up those holes for the other guys to run into and score goals. So even if it's not Dom scoring the goal, Chris Mueller has all this extra room to work with, or Merrem has extra room to work with, or a guy bombing forward like a Will Johnson. We saw that this year earlier in the season when he came in and he had the entire, basically the entire 6-yard box to himself for a
Right.
tap-in goal. So I mean, there's all kinds of things that Dom does for you that just aren't getting done when he's not on the field. So it's there's not a lot of guys like him, and that's why they spent a lot of money to get him. And he's definitely a key to what this team does. He's usually been a durable guy, but this year he's had some bumps and bruises, and he's missed some games. So hopefully we can put that behind him pretty soon and get him back out on the field. Dave, who was your man of the match for this?
This was a no-brainer, and it seems to be a theme going on, but it's going to be Mr. Christian Higuita. He obviously he had the goal, but he did so much. I made sure I watched him in particular. He was linking up the defensive line up to the front. He was pointing to places where he wanted guys to go. His passes were excellent. He seemed to be doing everything that you would want from him in a game again, and then also scoring. You know, it's I can't say enough. He took care of the midfield, and he didn't just take care of the midfield, but he also was the engine for the attack. And I thought he had another exceptional game, and I hope it continues. It seems like maybe he has actually turned a corner, and if we can expect this from him week in, week out, that's a whole nother piece that at the beginning of the season you or I don't think would have expected.
Yeah, Higuita for me also. He definitely stepped up his game this year. He looks like a confident player. He's certainly more willing to get into the attack and more comfortable getting into the attack than he was. But he still continues to do good work getting back and breaking up play all over the field, shielding the ball very well, and really not giving much space and being able to take the ball away. So he's been really doing it on all ends of the pitch, and really want to see that continue. He's really been good. He was also very dejected after the game. I mean, I don't know how much they showed on television, but we saw him get the guitar for being man of the match, and I never seen somebody so unhappy to get a free guitar.
Fair enough. But I think it's because he has done exactly what we said. Is he's taking ownership of the team in certain respects, and so I with the all the guys out on the field, and him being somebody that's been around longer, I feel that he's taking a bit of that leadership role. Like I said, you can see it if you go back and watch that match. You can see him pointing out things, giving out commands. Trying to get guys and like I said, making excellent passes. So I think that he was dejected because he's putting so much into it, and he's playing amazing. But I think he really wanted that result from that, especially after he scored that goal. And I think we all felt, you said earlier, that it seemed that Orlando should have gotten a result, maybe even was more likely to get a second goal. But so yeah, still sad, for him. He did get a guitar, and
and I didn't.
And you didn't.
And I did. But yeah.
Well, that's because you didn't get it in the center back like we hoped.
That's right. The entire second half seemed like it was played in Chicago's half of the field. So it really did feel like another goal was coming. It just never came. And that's again, maybe it doesn't change things to have Dom on the field, but I have a feeling if Dom was on the field, they're scoring 4 or 5 goals in that game, just because he's going to have a little bit more sharpness around net, and he's going to open more space for others. And I thought that Chicago, I would give them credit. I thought their back four played very well in the game. They got unlocked a few times, but it didn't end up hurting them because either McLean was there to make a save or Orlando would miss the net. But I thought their back four probably played their best game of the year. And
McLean also did.
Here's the other thing, Dave, is when you and I have both seen enough games, we both cheer for teams in the EPL, especially that are always in the top four. And we've seen a lot of games where our team has been the better team and not won the game over the years. And it just doesn't always work out that the better team wins the game. And I think there was no question Orlando City was the better team on Saturday night, but they did not get the win. And it takes special things to win those games. What it takes is 2 save of the week candidates by McLean. It's 2 of MLS's goal of the week candidates are from that game, Katai and Gordon are both up for MLS Goal of the Week. One of McLean's saves got was up for MLS Save of the Week. So it takes special plays when your team is outmatched to win a game. And Chicago rose to the occasion. I tip my cap to them. And obviously, Orlando City didn't finish. They didn't do enough to get the victory. But, you know, most nights that would have been fine. Most nights that effort, those chances, that possession, that passing accuracy is going to be enough to get it done. It just wasn't this time. So we move forward. We hope to get a result at Yankee Stadium and hit a couple of home runs in that game and get out of there with a win. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I've said it before. Soccer is a long stretch of disappointment and heartbreak with splotches of pure joy.
Yeah, and also a lot of frustration in between all of that.
Oh, yes.
So, anyway, we move forward, and hopefully the lads in purple can come back from New York with some points, and we can make go into the U.S. Open Cup match in round four at Miami with a little bit of momentum, hopefully. Dave, we got another professional soccer team to talk about, the Orlando Pride, playing twice since we last spoke. And they had two different results. But the one thing that was in common to both of those games is the Pride have found their scoring boots. And they put three up on the best team in the league. And it wasn't quite enough in a Wednesday 4-3 loss to North Carolina. But then they put five up on the road at Chicago. And that was a place where they hadn't scored a goal their first couple of trips up there. And they were able to just absolutely blast the Red Stars out of the building after building an early lead and seeing it evaporate. They just went on a late scoring binge. So two games, the Pride have now completed five of the six games in what I call their schedule gauntlet of the season, which was five out of six on the road and the one home game against the North Carolina Courage, the best team in the league. So I said all along, two wins and two draws would be a fantastic outcome. They have three wins and a draw with a game left in this stretch.
So you're saying it was better than advertised?
I'm saying, yeah, they definitely got through this bitter part of the schedule in really, really good shape. It was a weird game. The North Carolina game was very strange because the team kind of – North Carolina, you know, they played in the midweek. Or they played on the weekend, so they had a short week. So people expect now they'll come down, they'll be tired, they'll wilt in the heat and that kind of thing. But a team that's rolling sometimes doesn't matter how tired they are. If they're rolling and they're confident, sometimes they just continue to do that. And then the Pride, meanwhile, had a long layoff, and I think that kind of made it difficult for them to get into the game. And it looked like they were a bit slow, a bit sluggish, not really alert early in the game, and it took them a while to get into it. The first half, Tom Cermani called their worst half the worst half of soccer in Orlando Pride history, but they only got out of that half down a goal. Now, some of that was some good fortune. Some of that was absolutely outstanding goalkeeping by Ashlyn Harris. And then halftime came, things changed a little bit. Orlando got back in the game. They tied it up. They fell behind. They gave up another goal, even though at the time they sort of were taking the game to North Carolina. It seemed like North Carolina got a goal or two against the run of play, made it 3-1. The Pride were able to rally from that and make it 3-3. And then just like it really seemed like a game that deserved to be a tie, just as it was about to become one, this long-ass cross comes in, and Ashlyn Harris decides, my defense will figure it out. I don't need to come off my line a few steps and grab that. And it's in the net. It was not good. And as good as Ashlyn Harris was in the first half of that game, she was equally as awful in the second half. She gave up an own goal, which I think they very generously did not give an own goal, and they gave it to the North Carolina player. But it was an own goal. It was a ball off the post that ricocheted back across the front of goal, hit Harris and went in. So if that's not an own goal, the only way that's not an own goal, Dave, is if she's standing inside the net. If she's standing she's standing behind the goal line and it hits her and goes in, hits the back of the net, then it's not an own goal. But I have no idea how that's not an own goal.
And that was with Zdorsky trying to get it out of there too.
That was the second one. The late one
Right.
was the one which really was almost another own goal. It barely crossed the line, and it looked like they had a chance to keep that out. But some goalkeepers do this thing where they think, oh, that's going in or it's going wide, so they don't move. And it really cost Ashlyn Harris on that goal, not the last goal, but the earlier one that went in off of her. Because if she just takes a step toward her post, if that ball hits the post and comes back toward her, she's in position. She's going to catch that ball.
Right.
She lets it go. It bounces sideways off, and it comes at her to her side, and it bounces off her side. Then she's left struggling to try to reach out a paw and paw it out of the net. And she did that, but they ruled that it crossed the line in its entirety. We don't have goal line technology in the NWSL, so we don't know if it crossed completely, but we've got to give them the benefit of the doubt on that one. But anyway you look at it, I think she was poor on that one. I think she was poor on the fourth goal. And the defense was a mess in that game. There
Yeah.
were and I'm going to be very critical of Allie Krieger here, because I'm going to be very nice to Allie Krieger, when we talk about the next game. But I thought Allie had a terrible game. There was an unlucky goal that North Carolina scored when Kristen Edmonds tried to clear a ball out of the from front of the net, and she knocked it off the back of another North Carolina player, and it came to McDonald. I'm not convinced that was onside at all. In fact, I'm pretty convinced it was offside, but it counted. And at the end of the day, I really feel like a 3-3 draw would have been a very fair result for both teams, because I felt like North Carolina was by far the better team in the first half, and I felt like the Pride were the much better team in the second half. They just really got undone by some bizarre plays.
It was absolutely a game of two halves, like you said, with one team being better than one in the other. And then, yeah, bizarre is the right word. It's you come back and tie, or equalize three times, and then you get that heartbreaker of the last one. It's incredibly hard, especially given that it was what, 90th minute when they scored that last one. So to get a fourth equalizer is incredibly difficult. Scoring four goals is incredibly difficult, let alone pulling back four times. So and that last one, I think it was McDonald again. Goes over Harris, Zdorsky can't keep it out, and you just, I was exhausted at that point because I was up and down the entire game with, going down, coming back, going down, coming back, and by that last one, I was just like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough to watch. And again, I'm very critical of goalkeepers that look like they're afraid to come off their line. And it looked like Ashlyn on that last play had plenty of time to come out, take charge of that situation, and decided not to. Maybe she couldn't have. Maybe I'm misreading it. But it looked like she had the opportunity to do that. She did not. But she kind of came about halfway out, so the ball kind of went. Sort of, she was kind of in no man's land, I guess is what I'm trying to
It
say.
she was absolutely no man's land, and it just kind of went over top of her just a bit, like
Yeah.
barely. And like I said, and just give it up to Zdorsky for trying to get to it, but ugh.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that Shalina couldn't keep it out. It really a 3-3 would have been great. That would have really kept things going in terms of the it wouldn't have been a win streak anymore. It would have been an unbeaten streak, would have reached six, but the win streak was snapped. Or the unbeaten streak was snapped at five. It would have been an unbeaten streak at six, and then it would have been seven, because they went to Chicago, Dave, and they really dominated the Chicago Red Stars. They were there were some issues again on the back line with, apparently they don't think that Sam Kerr is good or something. I don't know. Maybe they don't realize how good she is, but it was bizarre to me that no one ever really tracked her, and it was pretty clear from early on that Chicago was just going to lop balls over the top and try to get Sam in behind everybody, and still they were able to do it about four times. And It was tough, but
Which, if
Orlando.
you have Sam Kerr, that's not a bad strategy.
Yeah, it is. Before I move on completely to that Chicago game, though, I do want to say Marta with two assists against the North Carolina Courage. It was good to see her setting goals up again. And Alana Kennedy in that game got the podcast bump with her goal. So good job for Alana. So Chicago, they come out and they instantly jump on the Red Stars, and there's two goals in the first 6 minutes, and you're feeling pretty good about things because Rachel Hill scored early, and Alex Morgan scored on just a glorious ball in from Marta onto her head, and you don't see a lot of headed goals by Morgan, but that one was a good one. And
Well,
so it was two
Marta put
nothing
it
early.
right on her forehead, so.
Yeah. So it's 2-0 and things are looking pretty good, and it was really close to being three, and then Kerr pulls one back, and there was again another one of those weird goals, Dave. It was Chicago ended up tying it 2-2, but there was a play where Kerr gets in behind. Harris makes a heck of a save to keep it out. They clear it, but they don't clear it all the way out. They just clear it sort of sideways. I think it was Zdorsky had a chance to just blast that into the third row. She just
Yep.
sends it out wide. So it comes back in, and the ball in the air comes back in, and Zdorsky figures she can get on that. So she gets up, and the thing goes like an inch and a half over her head. And Poliana was she was very tightly guarding air in the middle of some space. That space was locked down. It was not going to score. But
No.
Sam Kerr was between that space and Sidorsky, and the ball fell onto her head. She gets a pretty weak header, and it looked like, okay, well, Ashlyn's going to get over to get that. But for whatever reason, just not able to quite get there. It was just perfect placement and just inside the post. And Harris just maybe a hand's width from being able to get the save. So it became 2-2 at that point, and you're like, man, Orlando has played far too good in this game to not get all 3 points. And then they came out in the second half, and the rest of the second half just dominated the game. Sydney LaRue was introduced, and Allie Krieger came to life, Dave. She put on she put every bit an inch perfect cross onto LaRue's head as Marta had earlier to Alex Morgan, and that was a beautiful ball in. LaRue made no mistake, heads it in. It's an NWSL goal of the week candidate. Go vote on Twitter for Sydney LaRue, because it's been a while waiting for her to score a goal. But we didn't have to wait long for her to score a second goal, because Krieger involved again in the build-up for the second goal, and Morgan gets it crossed in. Takes a little bit of a deflection behind Sid, so Sid just turns around, picks it up, and spins and shoots and scores again. So 2 goals in 2 minutes for Sydney LaRue makes it 4-2, and then another late strike, this time by Danny Weatherholt, to make it 5-2, an absolute destruction of the Red Stars.
Yeah, it was good to see Sid get on the scoring a train with two, like you said, 2 in 2 minutes. Fantastic. And then the rest of the team, obviously, like you said, Krieger was getting good balls in, but and she was actually the one that sent the ball to Van Egmond, who sent it to Morgan, who crossed it in for LaRue. So I mean, she started that one.
Yeah, part of that buildup.
Right, she was part of that buildup. So all the problems that she had in the previous game against the Courage, she more than made up for in the game, and completely turned it around. So I'll give up the Courage game, as everybody has a bad game every once in a while. Krieger's typically pretty good, and so 5-2, you can't ask for anything more than that. It's one of those ones where if you see the score at half, you're like, okay, and then you see the score at the end, you're like, oh, I got to go watch this if you missed it, because something big happened. I need to go watch this.
Yeah, now remember, Toni Pressley here on this program told us that she thinks it's just a matter of time before the team scores a few goals and then kind of opens up the floodgates. And
She was right.
those 3 goals against the Courage were definitely encouraging for the next game, because then 5 more, and it could have been more, because Alana Kennedy had a header that Lissonnaire got like a fingertip on and knocked it off of the post, and then somehow somehow the ball in the 6 yard box got kicked over the net instead of into the net. I don't know how that happened, but yeah, there were other opportunities for Orlando Pride to score more. But it was good to see Morgan and LaRue get on the score sheet, and Rachel Hill, and Marta get another assist, 3 assists in 2 games for her. Just an outstanding day, and it looks like the Pride have figured out how to win on the road.
Well, let's give it up to Tony. She's a prophet. She said it on the podcast, and it came true. So I don't know if that's a podcast bump or if that's just her being awesome. But I know she's listening. So let's thank her for that. But yeah, it's and obviously she was right. And we knew that this team had offensive firepower. You know, it may have taken a little longer for them to really get it going than we would have liked. But if this is more indicative of what we can expect, they're going to be incredibly dangerous. And like you said, they were in the tough part of the season right now. If they get into the supposedly easier part of the season and they're still scoring goals like this, look out.
So one more game in this gauntlet of 6 games, and that's at Seattle on Sunday. Orlando Pride will be without Alex Morgan and Ashlyn Harris, who were both called up to the U.S. Women's National Team, and they were all of the players being asked to report June 1st because reasons.
We talked about that last week.
What reasons, I don't know. 6 days before a friendly makes no sense to me to take players away from your domestic league, but they did it. Rapinoe will not obviously be there for Seattle, so both teams missing their big guns. But Seattle's a good defensive club. It's going to be a difficult trip to play out there, and not a place that Orlando has been real successful. But an opportunity here, Dave, to really close out this road trip with a bang. If they can get 1 or 3 points there, that is a tremendous stretch of 6 games, mm-hmm. much better than you would have ever expected when you looked at the schedule. Yep. And you know, like you said, the schedule sets up very well the second half of the season. More home games, more of the teams closer to the bottom of the table. Although there are more meetings with North Carolina, but there's more Houston, there's more Sky Blue, there's more Washington, there's more Houston coming. So it does set up nicely for a stretch run for the Pride. I don't know that anybody's catching the Courage this year, so they might be playing for second place. But once they the key thing is just getting the playoffs. Anything can happen once you get in the playoffs. So it would be great to see the Pride finish the season strong, get locked down a second spot, get a home game mm-hmm. in the semis, and then go up to Portland for that final against whoever wins the other one. So it'll be fun to see what happens. We'll be back to talk about Orlando Pride and Seattle next week. And now I believe we should probably get to this week's guest because he played an integral part of Orlando City's game unexpectedly on Saturday. And we'll get to that interview right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, happy to have with us back again, Tony Rocha, who played center back this week for Orlando City. It's been a while since we've had you on, Tony. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I wanted to start out by asking you just really where this whole center back thing started, because the team has been going through some injuries, going through international mm-hmm. absence, and all of a sudden there's no center backs left. And we're hearing reports Tony Rocha is training at center back in at training with the team, and then you go out and you get a start, and just tell me how that whole thing came about.
Well, it started after the first year I signed with the MLS team. Towards the end, I kind of trained at center back in small side of games, and I brought up to the coaches that I used to play center back in college, and they had no idea. And then so this year, with, like you just said, people being injured and leaving for international duty, they'd known that I played center back, and so they were putting me in training, and I've been training pretty well the past couple of weeks and got a start this weekend at center back.
Well, obviously we knew that. We saw you play. How was it being back at center back for the first time in I don't know how long?
It was fun. I enjoyed it. I remember when I first moved to center back in college, I hated it because I was used to getting up and down the field and being in attack. And then when I got moved to center back, it literally was, you can't move. You're the last line of defense. But playing that for a while, I got used to it, and so I enjoyed the game this weekend.
So you say you're the last line of defense, but I have to tell you, I saw you maybe a little bit of muscle memory start to come up the field a few times there. What was it like for you to try and pick your spots about when to come forward?
Yeah, towards the end of the first half, I kind of noticed that there was a lot of space whenever me or whenever Shula had the ball, and we weren't doing that well of a job kind of bringing it up and making it easier for the midfielders and the forwards. So whenever we did get it towards the end of the first half, kind of taking that space and making one of their players commit because they were playing man-for-man, so it would have been easier to kind of get the ball up the field doing it that way. So kind of just recognizing the space that we had in front of us and taking it.
Well, obviously, you know, that's the space in front of you. I want to talk about behind you, you know, the whole last line of defense. Obviously, that, Joe might take a issue with that, since he probably thinks it's him. How was communication with him? Was it was he barking orders? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, being on the field, it's definitely hard to hear your teammates with just how loud it is in the stadium. And so that's what we kind of work on during training, the whole kind of nonverbal communication and the positioning and all that stuff. But yeah, I definitely heard him a couple of times back there organizing and kind of keeping everything organized in front of him.
So I asked Jason after the match why Chris couldn't move his arm in the second half. And he says that he's got a broken arm and played with it the whole second half. Can you imagine playing? Have you ever done anything like that? I can't even imagine getting out of bed with a broken arm, let alone playing 45 minutes of MLS soccer.
Yeah, I fractured my collarbone one time during a scrimmage, not during a game, and I came out immediately after that just because I couldn't move my arm. And I remember one time in the second half, he went in shoulder with somebody, and I could just see the grimace on his face and just eating that pain that I'm sure he had the entire second half. He's definitely a strong guy back there.
Yeah, we're hearing that he might still be playing with a broken arm. I mean, obviously, they'll wrap it or, you know, having a cast. I guess maybe it'll be easier for him. With that new role and with the uncertainty of who's going to be playing, you know, what have been the challenges stepping back into that center back role for you?
Just positioning, both offensively and defensively. Like I mentioned before, the ability to take the ball forward when there's space, just watching the runs, like the forward running in behind or the other wide player running in behind and kind of just keeping your head on a swivel and focusing on those kind of things, and also the organizing the players in front of you. I know CJ always tells me all the time to constantly be communicating to people in front of you and keep people organized and stuff. So I think that's kind of been a hard adjustment, but something that I've had to work on being moved back to center back because I can see the entire field and kind of keep people organized.
Now, Tony, when you play a game like that where it really seemed like Chicago was just there to hang on and see what they could get out of the game, and you guys were really taking it to them throughout the match, and just to get a couple of goals that really, center back wise, you can't do anything about the free kick, obviously, and then I don't think anybody saw the laser from Gordon coming late in the game. I don't know if there's anything else you could have done on that one, if you had maybe any chance to close down, or if maybe somebody else could have closed him down. But what do you take from a game like that where you guys really play well, get a lot of chances? I mean, 20 plus shots on goal or shots at the net and come away empty. I mean, how does the team respond to things like that?
Yeah, it was tough in the locker room after the game because we know we all deserve to get something from the game. And we all knew that we deserved 3 points from the game. But, you know, we just put the positives from the game. Like you said, we had a ton of chances. You know, on a different night, the chances going, and we ended up winning 5-2. So so we can't really focus on the negatives of it and just take it game by game. So now our next focus is New York City and kind of put that game behind us. And so we're not really thinking about that and just focus on New York City.
Oh, speaking of New York City and the playing on the postage stamp that is their field, how does that affect the game plan or your positioning? You know, given the lack of space.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be a lot more compact. I've never played in New York, so it's going to be a different experience for me if I end up getting the start again. But yeah, just keeping everybody organized and knowing that the space behind us really isn't as much as it is on a normal size field. So maybe we can step a little bit higher and press them.
Now, we just got word that you know, Jonathan Spector has been cleared for full training, and you know, obviously the team is deep. You don't worry when one man goes down, you have a next man up mentality. But what does it mean to you to get the captain back, not only you know, in games down the road when he gets his match fitness, but in training every day?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a confidence booster. I mean, he's a captain for a reason. He not only leads on the field, but off the field, and kind of having him there and watching how he plays and kind of learning from him and then him giving me advice on what I should be doing back there and all that stuff. And it's definitely a positive having him back.
Now, you guys are about to embark on a 3-game road trip, obviously starting with New York, as we just said. You know, coming off that that loss at home, what's the mentality of the team? What are you guys hoping to accomplish other than, you know, 9 points, obviously?
Yeah, I know we have a long road trip coming up, but honestly, we're just focusing on New York City. Like, we just trying to take it one game at a time, and so getting ourselves ready tactically and physically to go out and put a good performance against New York City.
So getting your first start at center back for Orlando City, it was probably not your favorite thing to see that Nemanja Nikolic, last year's Golden Boot winner, was going to be the guy you were facing and trying to shut down. But you guys actually did shut him down. And you know, how were you guys able to not only snuff out Nikolic as a danger, but also to really kind of force him off the pitch at halftime?
Yeah, I mean, we watched the video on all the teams and kind of see their tendencies and everything. And so we were kind of aware what he was going to do in the first half. And luckily, the plan that we had worked. And you saw he got subbed at halftime. Not sure if that was because he wasn't doing anything or just for a tactical change. But yeah, we definitely prepared well for him.
How would you rate your sorry, Dave, I don't mean to cut you off. How would you rate your performance in your first start at center back for Orlando City?
That's a tough question. I thought I did well. I'm obviously going to put blame on myself for the second goal because I think I could have stepped, and maybe that would have affected his shot or something. But I think apart from that, I think I did well defensively in it being my first start at center back in a while. I think I put in a good performance.
I'd say we all have to agree with that assessment, you know, especially because that's not the position you've been playing, and it's one of those things where if there's nothing glaringly bad, then that means you probably did a decent job. So you know, take a little solace in that. You know, but as Michael said earlier, you know, you're one of the guys that's been around for a while. Tell me what if there's a difference in, you know, with this team, with all the new guys, you know, how do you see it as somebody who's been around for a while?
I would say that the players that they brought in, they have a different type of professionalism about them, and I think that resonates throughout the team. We have a lot of leaders on the team, and that helps kind of the younger guys and the guys that haven't been here for a while to kind of create a new culture within the club, and I've definitely seen that change this year.
Now, Cam Lindley and Pierre Da Silva got to go play for Anthony Pulis this past weekend. You were able to get a couple game loan over to St. Louis. How was it getting back together with him and seeing some familiar faces over there and playing some USL soccer?
Yeah, it was good seeing him. I enjoyed playing under him when he was here, and it was definitely an easy transition to go to a new team and not really know. Well, I know a couple of the guys. Austin Marsh was over there to play the OCB last year, and Albert Dico was there, and Jake, the goalkeeper. So a couple of faces kind of made it easier and kind of made me feel more comfortable the first few days I was in, because it was Friday. I flew on Thursday. Friday I had the first training, and then Saturday I was already in the game, so it kind of made my nerves a little easier, and also playing under a coach that I respect. It was fun. I enjoyed the two games that I played there.
Switching gears back to New York City, I'm curious, you know, what do you think are the keys for you guys to go get a result there? You know, getting back on the front foot and back on the winning side of a match. Is there anything that we haven't seen that you guys need to do, or how do you see that?
Yeah, obviously New York City is a really good team in this league, and I think playing away from home is always tough. So I think we just need to be organized defensively and take our chances.
Now this David Villa guy is kind of good. You're gonna have, if you get to play, you're gonna have to go up against him. Have you studied his movements? Because it seems to me that his greatest asset as a striker in this league is that he sort of makes these quick, unpredictable runs, and before you are aware of what he's doing, it's kind of too late to stop
too
him.
Late. Yeah.
So what do you have you looked at that?
No, we haven't yet this week. But I'm sure we will, and I know just like we watch video on Nikolic, we're gonna watch video on David De Villa, and so we're gonna try to do the best that we can to prevent kind of his strengths throughout the game, and hopefully keep a clean sheet.
Now you probably had a good look at Christian Higuita, you know, as he was doing his thing up ahead of you on the field. It seems that he's maybe turned a corner, is playing at a different level than he has in the past. What are your impressions about him over the last, say, 5-6 games?
Yeah, I mean, he's been playing very well, not only in games but in training, and I think that's why he's been playing well in games, is because he's been playing well in training. And just his intensity in training and how he trains has really, I would say, helped him play the way that he's played, and kind of been a solid rock for us in the middle of the field.
So before we let you go, you know, a lot of the fans don't get to see really what you guys do in your, you know, in training. I know that, there were a lot of questions with OCB going away and how are guys going to get competitive minutes and stay match fit and that kind of thing. But you guys are playing a lot of low key behind the scenes scrimmages, locally. Mm-hmm. Can you just kind of take us through that? You know, what you guys have been doing?
Yeah. For the players that don't play, during the game on Saturday, there'd be a scrimmage for us to play on Sunday. And it's been nice because we get to play, get to stay game fit. It's always nice kind of being in game situations, because I know it's different than being just in training and playing small-sided. So that's definitely helped us. And with injuries and Open Cup games, the players that there's going to be a lot of players being rotated, and having those scrimmages is kind of help prepare for these games coming up.
Who are some of the teams that you guys have scrimmaged against?
Our Montverde Academy, played Jacksonville University, Jacksonville Armada, FIU, and UCF, I think, are a few. I can't remember the other ones.
All right, so some pretty good competition. Well, Tony, thanks so much for being with us. We really appreciate you stopping back by and you know, telling us about your foray back into the back line and all the other things we talked about. And we wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you, and thanks again for having me.
All right, Dave, we're heading into some stoppage time now. Thanks again to Tony Rocha for stopping by, being a repeat visitor here on the podcast. And thanks to Rafa Cabrera, who's actually off work, but spending time with his family, who took time out to connect us with Tony on his day off. So that was nice. So thank you to Rafa, and thanks to Tony.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rafa. Wearing his brand new U.S. National jersey.
Yeah, got it as a gift, he said. That's good. I wish somebody would give me some like that, because those are pricey, as we found out today. All right. We're going to talk about the U.S. a little bit, but before we do that, why don't we get to our mailbag? We're going to do our Ask the Mainland mailbag. No, you know what? Let's do the men's national team first, then we'll do our mailbag. Sorry, didn't mean to cross everybody up. Everybody, I just threw your whole agenda off for the rest of the day, but we're going to talk about the U.S. men's national team next.
Double head fake.
Yeah, so, you know, very... very young team, a lot of new faces out there to play Bolivia. And again, this is not like this wasn't Bolivia A squad or maybe even B squad. This was a lot of young Bolivians and a few veterans mixed in. But it was definitely not Bolivia's best side or even probably the second best side that they could trot out there. But the U.S., Dave, in Philadelphia on Memorial Day was pretty much in control throughout. I'm not sure that that Alex Bono had to make a save in his MLS or in his U.S. men's national team debut. Three guys scored their first goal ever for the U.S., including Josh Sargent, Walker Zimmerman, and Tim Weah. So
Tim Weah, yeah.
Very, very nice overall game. I thought the team did a lot of good things. You can see some really great things ahead for Weah and Sargent and Weston McKennie and Anthony Robinson and guys like that. I think there were a lot of players that really played well in that game. Who stood out to you?
Sargent and Weah, obviously, you know, both had goals. I think that the other one was Robinson. He was making some excellent crosses, and and I know I said in our internal chat that was probably the most fun I've had watching the U.S. men's national team, and I don't know how long, probably since World Cup. And it was a joy to watch, you know, these young guys go out, obviously try hard, but not only that, but like you said, it was a pretty dominating performance. No, not Bolivia's top team. But still, you know, you can see glimpses of the future and the quality that's going to be there. And if they continue to develop like we hope they will, and if you've got this wave of young guys, it's so promising.
Yeah, it's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of reason for U.S. fans to be excited after seeing that performance, because there's so much potential there. Pulisic didn't even play that well. You know, Christian has played a lot of soccer this year and is ready for a break. And he actually was man-marked throughout the game. Interesting tactic by the Bolivian coach to man-mark him throughout the match. And it did work to some extent. He was also a little bit handcuffed because he's a better wide player than he is up the middle. And he was playing a lot of, you know, interior midfield along the way, but I thought also Rubio Rubin did a lot of really nice things in the game on that left side, and just a fun game. The U.S. ends up winning 3-0, not a problem. I think there's a lot of excitement for some of these young guys. Sargent looks like he's you know, I watched him in the U-17 World Cup and the U-20 World Cup, and he's a guy that we've had our eye on for quite some time, and he looks like he's going to be fantastic. He's really sort of developing a lot of tools in the toolbox that maybe weren't there even a year ago. Just a great hustle play to, you know, obviously a goalkeeper gaff, but you know, not getting enough on the ball. But he really hustled to track that down, made a great touch to pull it out of the air, turned around and still had to beat the keeper. So he had a lot to do. And even though it was really a howler on the goalkeeper to set up that goal, you know, Sargent still had a lot to do on that to get it done, and he got it done. So kudos to him.
That touch as it came over his head was picture perfect. And it, like you said, it was a gaffe, but he took advantage of it.
He did, and it was really nice to see the U.S. go out and play like that, and to play hard, and to close down space and not even allow Bolivia any breathing room. I don't know how many passes they had that went straight out of bounds because they just didn't have time to pick out their next pass. But it seemed like it was happening all night, and it was nice to see. I'm tempering my expectations here. I know a lot of people said, "Oh, I wish that was the team we'd have sent to Trinidad and Tobago." Trinidad and Tobago would have destroyed that team. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to rain. I don't mean to rain on your parade, but they would have gotten at that team. They would have held the ball more, and
Yes.
they probably would have torn up the defense a little bit. So I don't want to
If the
burst
guys that
anybody's
did
bubble.
play Trinidad and Tobago had played with the intensity that those guys played, it might have been a different result.
Exactly. So, but it was nice to see. And the U.S. now will go to Europe, much more difficult competition, but they've sent some folks home and called in some new people. They've sent Pulisic home, and he's not going to be on this trip, but they're going to play in Ireland and France, so that's two pretty good teams that they'll have to take on. And of course, they're still going to have a very young squad. They sent Bono back to Toronto, picked Zach Steffen back up off Columbus. That was one of the changes. Zimmerman, I think, is back on his way to LA. And, we're going to see some of those guys that were playing overseas get back in to the lineup. But still a lot of youngsters on the club, and it'll be good to see them get more, get blooded by better teams, I think.
Yeah, just remember, everybody, we've got, 4 years for all of these guys to develop. So, well, not quite 4 years, but you know what I mean. Enjoy the process. Enjoy these guys getting time. Bobby Wood's coming back, and he'll be able to lend some experience to the guys that he's going to be playing with. Christian's going to get a break after that long Bundesliga and Champions League season. So yeah, the World Cup's here, and we'll all watch it. But since the U.S. isn't in it, just enjoy the process going forward for these young guys and building that next generation.
Yeah. Okay, so that would normally bring us to the mailbag, but I do want to touch on this, Dave, before we get to the mailbag.
All right.
We got a new team coming in next year to MLS.
What?
FC Cincinnati joining
That's
MLS and
right.
starting play in 2019. What do you think of the selection of Cincinnati, and what do you think of the teams that were passed over, or the cities that were passed over?
Good for Cincinnati. I mean, if they're getting selected, hopefully they've put in the work and the due diligence and all that. I'm not gonna be against anybody who's able to do that. I do think it's kind of curious that it's a Ohio based team, and what that bodes for the future is yet to be seen. But remind me, who was the passed over?
Well, Sacramento for one.
Okay, well, I'd rather have Cincinnati than Sacramento. Let's face it, there's California's got a couple teams already.
Yeah, and Phoenix, I think, was in that group as well. But I mean, it's not that Sacramento did anything necessarily wrong.
No.
I think the Sacramento and Cincinnati both showed that they were capable and deserving. So I think that was good that they both got a look. But I think in the end, some of Sacramento's financing fell by the wayside. I think Cincinnati did enough to assure the team, the league, that they'd be, they'd have a venue to play in, a brand new soccer stadium. They're going to stay in Nippert Stadium until 2021, and then they're going to move into a new 21,000 seat soccer stadium. So I think it's great. I mean, it will mean nothing to the fans in Columbus if Columbus ends up moving to Austin as expected at the end of this season, because the Columbus fans are not going to jump on Cincinnati. They're not going to be Cincinnati fans.
No.
It just isn't going to happen. I mean, there may be a few, but the diehard Columbus Crew fans are not going to become Cincinnati fans overnight like that, because there is some rivalry in those Midwestern cities. And it would be even worse if the Crew were like a Cleveland team, and then people were like, "Well, you could just root for Cincinnati." No, that wouldn't work at all.
Yeah,
That
no.
would not work at all. I could tell you that. But Yeah, Cincinnati showed they were deserving. They really did a great job building that fan base up from the grassroots level up, and it's good to see. It's also surprising to me that they're coming in so soon, but it's going to be good to get more new teams in here. Of course, we don't know when Miami's going to get their act together, and
I was going to say they jumped Miami.
yeah, it's hard to say. So, but welcome to Cincinnati, and it's just going to be a new another new expansion club coming in next year. So that's exciting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I was just laughing because it is funny that they jump Miami. Because, well, every time something happens with Miami, it's usually pretty funny.
Yeah, everybody's jumping Miami. Let's face it. That's not happening anytime soon. It doesn't matter if they've been officially welcomed in.
I mean, Beckham's had that deal since he joined
If
MLS, and
that,
here we are, how many years
I don't
later?
know, but if the rumored name of Miami Freedom is turns out to be true,
Oh,
then
God.
I hope that they take forever to come in.
Yeah, that's not good.
All right, so let's get to our mailbag, Dave, so we can get these fine listeners on their way. Ask the
Okay.
Mainland Podcast, of course, is our mailbag. You can do that one of two ways. You can email us at themainland@gmail.com, or you could also hit us up on Twitter. We are at our Twitter handle is @themainland, and just be sure to use the AskTMLPC hashtag. So #AskTMLPC. Some people continue to just hit respond and don't use the hashtag. So it's kind of makes it harder to find sometimes in the glut of responses and notifications and that kind of thing. So
Come on, everybody. It's Twitter. You've got to know hashtag by
I'm
now.
going to start with Lee, who wants to be he wants to be a friend of the podcast. He's
Okay.
working toward friend of the podcast status, and he's getting there. Lee wants to know, other than at the mainland, of course, what or who do you think are the best soccer personalities or accounts to follow on Twitter?
Wow. Okay. You know what? I'm gonna the Men in Blazers guys. Those guys are phenomenal. They're fun to listen to. They're fun to read about. Alexi Lalas is a good follow. He is sometimes controversial, but sometimes that makes for interesting reading. Kyle Martinez, who we had on the podcast recently, he's a good one also. Let me see if anybody else off the top of my head. Off the top of my head, those are the couple that just kind of pop out there. So I think the Lawless one is the most interesting, just because, like I said, he sometimes is antagonistic,
I like to follow
and evidently
Alexi.
has a new album.
Yeah, I like to follow Alexi because he really does give zero dams. He's going to be honest and he's going to be himself,
Oh yeah.
and you know, maybe sometimes he plays some things up for shtick, but he's an interesting follow. I follow Taylor Twellman. He's got good information. He also sometimes goes off on rants. Kyle Martino, you mentioned, is good. I really like to follow Paul Tenorio because he's very knowledgeable and he often breaks news. So I like to read Paul. He's a very well-placed, journalist. So if you're not following Paul Tenorio, you should be. And then just, like of course, all the Orlando City and Orlando Pride players follow them, and of course the clubs and that kind of thing. So those are the ones that I probably follow the most and that I find the
I
most
think
interesting.
we've mentioned Christine Nairn in the past as a good follow.
Yeah, her and Haley Kopmeier are very good
Yeah.
follows. Kopp just had a tweet yesterday looking for dates for Toni Presley on The Bachelor.
You had to answer
Yeah,
certain questions right though, which was
she's been
fantastic.
trying to line up some Bachelor candidates for Toni, so that was good. Lee also wants to know, Dave, your bias aside, what are your thoughts for Manchester United and Liverpool, respectively? What are your thoughts on the Unai Emery hire at Arsenal? Is he the right guy to lead my Gunners back to Champions League and maybe even challenge for EPL titles in the years to come?
Okay, that was a lot. What was that again?
Unai Emery, what are your thoughts on his
Okay.
hiring? Is he the right guy to lead them back to Champions League and maybe compete for titles?
Anytime you come in after a legend, even if it's somebody who's been down for a little while, I mean, coming in after Wenger is going to be tough. no matter what. And, you know, hopes are going to be high for the Gunners, but it's going to take some time. It's just going to take some time. It's going to take some money. Can it eventually happen? Sure. Is he the right guy? I don't know. I'm always weary of the or leery of the person that comes in right after somebody who's been there for, you know, 20, 30 years. So I think it's a fine hire. Whether he's the one to do it or not, that I don't. I won't claim to have enough knowledge to know.
Yeah, I will admit that I don't know enough about him to think, you know, to really make an informed decision. But the key for me is that if he doesn't turn things around quickly, will he be around long enough to turn things around at all? Because it usually happens that fans of teams that are, you know, historically good don't have a lot of patience. So, you know, we've seen even guys that have pretty decent years but not great years wear out their welcome pretty quickly at places like Chelsea and that kind of thing. So
sure,
Manchester City and that. So, you know, I don't know. It could be. I'm going to go with could be. That's my answer.
All right. So I'm going to give it up to him here because he obviously is listening to the podcast enough to know that you're a United fan and I'm a Liverpool fan. So good on him for that.
Probably only mention it every week.
Let's not mention it this week. I can't take it.
We already
it this week.
Did. We already mentioned it. Too late.
No, I can't talk about it.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to talk about it because David Victor on Twitter wants to know, what are your thoughts on the Champions League final, the Ramos tackle on Saleh? And I'm going to start this one off by saying I didn't watch the game. I was getting ready and then driving and then to the stadium and then covering the Pride game on television and then Orlando City in person. So I had a very busy day and I didn't get to see the game. So I know you have some thoughts, Dave.
And I actually, they are in my article that went out today. Yeah, the Ramos was a Ramos was not a good example of what the beautiful game should be. You know, whether or not you agree there was a foul or if he should have been sent off or, you know, whether he actually intended to do anything or anything like that, that doesn't matter. He was not a good representative for the game. With Mo Salah going out that early in the game, it changed the entire complexion of the thing. Obviously, Salah is one of the very, very important parts. I feel bad for Karius, who if you want to read interesting, you know, stuff, go on, read the articles about, you know, Karius after that match and how bad he felt. And it's one of those things where, you know, they were the underdog. And, you know, they're going up against the big, you know, now 3-time in a row champs. And it's personally hurtful for me. And I'm glad that we asked this today and not like, you know, a couple of days ago, because I would have gone off on an entirely different rant. Plus, you know, I had the chance to write about it a little bit in the article. So it helped get some of it out. But yeah, you know, I think it would have been a different game if Mo had stayed in, and I probably haven't even answered the question.
Right. Well, you know what? I can tell you this without even having seen the game. Screw Sergio Ramos.
As an
Atletico Madrid fan in La Liga, I don't like him. I've got a GIF of him running into the box for a set piece and elbowing an Atletico player in the head on purpose.
Well, he did it to Karius in this match as well. Yeah. So there you go.
I mean, he's not a clean player, put it that way. I don't like him.
No.
He's probably one of those guys you like if he's on your team, but otherwise you hate his guts. Thanks for the question, David Victor. We got a question from Ken M. He wants to know, is Orlando City looking at making any moves during the summer transfer window? What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to. I think you mentioned it earlier. You know, they're going to have to get somebody else up there that can be a striker if Dom's unavailable, or even if he just needs to be subbed out. I wouldn't have said this, 6 weeks ago, but, you know, maybe more depth along the back line again. you know, will they be making some moves? Yes, of course they will. What their budget to do so is, you might know better than I on that, but They will be looking to do something, yes.
I think they'll be looking at moves, whether or not they pull the trigger. It's going to have to be the right move. I think they could certainly use some striker depth. I don't know if they haven't what pieces they have in place that they can move at this point. I think that teams will be inquiring about Christian Aguita after the way he's played this first part of the season. So
they might not want to give him up at this
point.
That's
true, but I think if his value has gone up to where they can't like turn down the offer, then that might be something that, you know, opens up money for something else, whether that's additional center back help or what, you know. Hopefully by then everybody's back and healthy and we won't have to worry about it.
Right.
It's certainly somebody that can give the team a little of what Dom gives them when he's not in, I think would be a really great addition to the team. So we'll see what happens. I'm interested in this summer window because the team was so active in the off season that there's not a lot to do, but there's always something that happens and there's usually something unexpected in there as well. So the team hasn't been able to use Jose Villarreal, so he might be a bargaining chip that they can use somewhere. It remains to be seen, but I do look forward to seeing what this next silly season has to offer. So thanks, Ken, for your question. Got an easy to answer question from Digby Smith.
Okay.
Digby wants to know, will Ali Krieger ever get to 100 caps for the U.S.? And the answer is no.
No, because the same reason that Alex Morgan and Harris got called up early for no good reason, Jill Ellis.
That's part of it. I think part of it also is I just think that in the modern game, she's lost the speed necessary to play at a high level in the international game at fullback, and I don't think she's a good enough center back to play there.
Right.
So unless she could maybe transition into like a defensive midfield role, but there's plenty of younger players to do that. I mean, she's in her 30s, man. It's just not going to happen. If it hasn't happened by now, it's not going to happen. I think she's at peace with that. She's had a really great international career, and I think she's okay with it. So I think we all should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thanks for the question, Digby. And Mac, finally, who do you guys have in the World Cup? I feel like there are so many teams that could win this year, and even though the U.S. won't be there, I'm still really excited. Dave, who do you got in the World Cup?
So if I go with my head, I'm going to go with the defending champs, Germany. They're going to be a strong team, and they're one of the ones I follow. I'm of German heritage and, you know, that whole 23andMe thing. So that's who I'm rooting for as my favorite. On the other hand, I think my good feeling, hope they do well team is going to be Iceland, because why not? They're fun. And then I think Belgium could, you know, also make some waves, you know, with the loaded squad that they have. It's just whether they can pull it all together. But as far as who I think, if I'm going to have to call a winner, I'm going to go with defending champs, Germany.
Yeah, I think for me, you're probably looking at Germany or Portugal, somebody like that. Spain certainly could be there. And those are the teams I really see kind of coming out of it. I don't really – like, obviously, as a U.S. fan, my team's not in it. And you go to Heritage, I would normally say, you know, feel pretty strongly about one of my – teams of my heritage, which is Italy, but they're not in it either. So this is really this is a really rough World Cup for me. And then the other side of my family is from England, so I will watch them with interest and wait for them to break my heart, because that's what the England squad does. So there's no love.
Yes,
on that.
they do that to English people, yeah. All the time.
So it won't be a matter of I have no rooting interest really, since England is destined to fail to meet expectations, and since Italy is not there, the U.S. isn't there, so my rooting interests are low. I'm going to root for Peru.
Anybody playing Mexico?
I'm going to root for Peru, even though it's so bad for Orlando to not have Yoshi. I'm going to root for Peru, and then I'll probably also be pulling for Iceland, but I don't think they're going to sneak up on anybody anymore. So I have a feeling they're going to make a quick exit, even though I would really like to see them do well.
I will also root against anybody playing Mexico.
Same. All right, Mac, thank you for the question. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions this week. If we didn't get to yours, did you put the hashtag on? I don't know, because I did a search, and I'm like, you know, I do my best. But you can email us themainland@gmail.com. I'll definitely see those. And you can also hit us up on Twitter. We are at themainland. And use that hashtag AskTMLPC, which stands for The Mainland Podcast, which I don't know why I sung it, but there you go. Anyhow, Dave, before we get out of here, there's still one more bit of business. There is a game coming up on a baseball diamond we have to talk about.
Is it the Orioles against the Yankees?
It is not. It is a soccer game on a baseball diamond, and it is the...
Why would anybody do that?
Because they're nuts. Again, I don't know. Because, Dave, the reason they would do that is because they can. Because they have oil money, and they don't have to build a downtown soccer-specific stadium.
Oh,
it's only a
right.
requirement for teams like Orlando.
Gotcha.
Yes, if you want to get in, you've got to do these things. Oh, do you have that much money? Okay, you don't have to do these things. So Atlanta, you do whatever you want. New York, do what you want. We're good with that.
Cincinnati, Orlando, you better have a stadium.
Minnesota, we're looking at you. So yeah, Dave, we've got Orlando City at New York City FC, the scene of a game earlier this season, which was won by the blue-shirted Pigeons of New York City FC, 2-0 on a pair of horrific giveaways that really just handed two goals to the hosts, and this will be game two in Yankee Stadium. The third meeting will be in Orlando City Stadium. How do you see this one? What's your key matchup, and what do you think your score prediction will be?
Okay, so good news, everybody. They're going to do better this time than they did last time. Key matchup is obviously going to be the defense, the back line, whoever that entails. Is that with a broken arm, Chris Schuler? Is Tony Rocha back in center back? Has Spector made his way back? Who knows? It's a crapshoot. Really don't know. So it's that back line against David Villa, and unfortunately he's very, very good. So that's the key matchup as far as my prediction. Like I said, they're going to do better this time. Orlando City continues their run of 2-1 losses. As much as I hate to predict it, but my hope is that we're always wrong. So if I predict 2-1, it won't happen.
All right. Well, I'm a little bit ticked off that you took my 2-1 score line, because that's what I was going to predict. Because how can I predict anything else until they show me they can do something other than 2-1? But yeah, I will stick with that score line. David Villa scares the crap out of me. And also they have guys like Morales and Ring that can sneak in and do some things as well. And it's just really difficult to play on that stupid baseball diamond. Even though early on, Orlando City had a little bit of success there. It just has kind of turned around in the most recent game. But not always the friendliest confines for Orlando City of late. And I would say that with some of the guys, and especially if Dom isn't back, especially if Sané can't go, although I expect him to be back, I think it's going to be really, really tough. And, I just don't see this being the light at the end of the tunnel quite yet. So, but if you want to get into my key matchup, obviously it's Villa against whatever backline we throw in there. I think that Orlando City went to New York with a very good game plan last time. They didn't execute it as well as they would have liked. I'm sure they would have liked to have had more chances on the counter and that kind of thing. But it was early in the season. The team wasn't quite where it is now. They didn't have Villa either, so that kind of makes up for it. Although Villa's replacement scored, so.
Right.
I would say, I think maybe that was Kleshton's first game for Orlando City after having to sit out a couple of games, so he wasn't quite ready yet. So I think the team is better now, but I think it's just a tough ask to go in there and win. But I think if they use the same game plan, I think they can be effective, especially the way the defensive midfield has come together. They also, I think, were playing a 4-4-2 still when they went there. So I think that they can sit back a little better, absorb pressure a little better. They just can't turn the ball over like they did last time, because really that was the only thing they did wrong, other than really not getting scoring chances, was that they, you know, they never were able to really get out on the counter because they didn't pass well. But that kind of happens on that damn pitch, because you'd never have as much space as you think you have. And the giveaways, you know, kept it from being a nil-nil draw, which I think everybody would have taken.
Cheap giveaways, indeed. Yeah, it was one of those shake your head at it, just can't. You can't even process it while you're watching it.
Yeah, it was bad. So, like you, I say 2-1, and I think definitely Villa against the whatever backline Orlando City is able to put together is the key matchup, because I think that you know, Orlando City's got they've got firepower. I think they're comfortable now countering, whereas they haven't been comfortable doing that in the past. Especially if Dom's playing, I think they're comfortable in counterattacking. So I think they go up there with a very defensive mindset, try to sit in and sort of grind out a result. I think that's what they're going to try to do, but I don't think it's going to be enough. I think it's 2-1.
Well, it's either good news, everyone, or bad news, everyone, because what we know for sure is it won't be 2-1.
Yeah, that's true. So that will just about do it, Dave. We have gotten through yet another podcast, so we'll put a bow on this episode number 127 and call it complete.
Woohoo!
And we will be back next week to talk about Orlando City at New York City FC. We'll be also talking about some U.S. Open Cup soccer.
Yep.
As Miami United awaits next week in the midweek. And also we will talk about the Pride's visit to Seattle. U.S. women will be playing China. We've got all kinds of stuff coming up to talk about. So it's going to be another long one next week. So put on a pot of coffee.
or, you know, just tap a keg and get through as much as you can before you pass out.
There you go. All right. So please read our stuff at themainland.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and all that stuff. I didn't get to look at the iTunes this week. So if we got any new 5-star reviews, I'll read them next week. So you'll have that to look forward to if that has happened. We'll be back to talk it all out next week right here. So on behalf of David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, founder, managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying go City and go Pride.